Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by us, the Fried Egg Pro Shop. This is one of the best ways you can support what we're doing. If you enjoy the podcast, enjoy the articles, the newsletter, great way to do it is support us through swag. So we have a number of Be Dratty polos in the shop. We just added a new putter cover. New hats, and also if you're looking to dress up your office, we have photography there. Office, home, whatever it may be, apartment. We have photography there. It's stunning, especially if you get the metal variety. I highly recommend it. Anyways, you can visit the Pro Shop at proshop.thefriedegg.com. It's Masters Week, the arguably best week of the year. And it's upon us. It's been just a few months since the last Masters. For this episode, to preview the Masters, I thought nobody would be better than Shane Bacon. Shane is a host of Golf Today. He does it with Damon Hack over the weekends and tournament rounds during the week, every week on Golf Channel. This year, he will be part of the Live From crew as well, as he will be doing some Masters.com coverage. So he's dialed in, needed to bring somebody on that's smarter than me to talk about this Masters. So we each came up with five things to talk about, and we get into it. So this should get you all primed and ready to go for the Masters. If you're looking for more coverage, just a quick reminder, I am on the Shotgun Start. I host that with Brendan Porath. We will be doing daily podcasts all week long. So check out that in the Shotgun Start feed on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. But without further ado, here is the great Shane Bacon.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Shane, welcome back. It's been a while.
Appreciate you having me. Excited to be on the Fried Egg Podcast. You've got a fancy polo on and everything. Look at you with your... Is that a Seminole polo?
It is a Seminole polo.
Nice. You're fancy boy.
Recently visited. Always good to take a walk around that place. They got that Walker Cup coming up.
I'm jealous. Have you never been down there? Never played golf in that area. And I think we are... Wife and I are planning a... get out of the Northeast, the real winter February trip down to Florida next year. That's one of our things. And so I think I'm going to be texting and hitting up everybody I can about playing a little bit of golf.
The Swamp?
Yeah.
You know, outside of a few places, you could kind of forget about playing golf down there. But if you're only going for a few days, there's plenty of good places to see.
I'm not that fancy. Just as long as it's got a tee box, a couple of greens that I can swing in, and it's not, you know, 32 degrees and windy, I'm going to be in on it.
That was the most amazing thing I found. It was like 75 and sunny every day. It's just unbelievable way to live your winters. Hey, you know, Golf Channel personality, we haven't talked to you. You know, you are the host of Golf Today. You host it with Damon Hack. And now you're also part of Live From. I got to ask... You know, as a golf fan who grew up with Live From being kind of like an institution of major championships, like round ends, you turn on Live From. Do you pitch yourself a little bit about being part of that?
Absolutely. I mean, I being at the Players and getting a chance to kind of host it every day was wild. You know, getting a chance to kind of be in that seat and work with Noda and Trevor and we're recording on Tuesday. Damon Hack and I are going to host for a couple hours today and take through some of the pressers. I think we got Phil and Rory and Dustin. So that'll be fun. I mean, being a part of any of this stuff is just crazy. And being involved in the capacity, you know, I go back to 2 years ago, Andy, with you and I kind of bumming around Augusta. And you guys obviously had a lot of work. You guys were kind of getting Shotgun Start going. And you had the Bixby House. And I was over there. But I didn't really have a lot I was doing in the area, you know, in terms of work, and to kind of fast forward a couple of years and kind of have these opportunities is wild. So yes, I definitely do pinch myself. I am, I'm excited to be a part of it. It's very, very cool. I got, you know, more text during the players than I've received in a long time for anything I've done. So I can only imagine what this week's going to be like. We did a look back. We do a thing, tournaments we forget. It's a little bit like kind of what you guys do in terms of kind of looking back, obviously way more condensed version for TV, but we did a look, Damon and I did a look back. We called it Masters Worth Remembering on Monday, where we look back at 91 and Woozy's win. And then we're going to dive a little deeper into Rory today. So, you know, it's just fun. It's 5-minute little hits here and there on Live From, and involved in that coverage is very cool.
Sneaky underrated old Masters is that Stadler one with Dan Pohl. I love the Dan Pohl story. He's got a golf course in Michigan called the Pohl Cat that he designed.
The Pohl Cat?
The Pohl Cat.
Have you played it?
No, I want to, though.
I need to see the logo.
I know. And he was like long hitter before, and obviously great athlete. Like, they talked about how he could have played Major League Baseball. He was, you know, he was All-State in three different sports in high school. So, you know, that was a cool one, and he almost won, but it would have been one of those obscure Masters winners. But yeah, looking back at tournaments is so fun. You just find so much little info, and Woozy is always a character to pull back threads on.
Yeah, you know, I can kind of tell my wife this one day. I can go back over the course of my adult life, and I kind of know how old I was, just dependent on what I was wearing at the time. And one of the cool things about going back in any sports writing, but especially golf, is how they wrote, you know, how they wrote about the players, how they wrote about tournaments, the stuff they would dissect. You know, sometimes it was the way they looked. I know you guys have focused a lot on this, the way they looked, the way they dressed. You don't see that as much. I don't feel like writing is as revealing as in the negative as it used to be, and so it's definitely exciting to kind of look back on that type of stuff. And obviously, I mean, you forget sometimes how many people had chances to win. I mean, that's the thing about these major championships and these big events is, you know, players that didn't win one having so many opportunities. I mean, I can only imagine how many times on this podcast you're going to bring up Lee Westwood. And when you dive through his career to look at how close he's been so many times in this particular major championship and still hasn't won one. And, you know, I mean, outside of maybe this year, probably will not win one. It's defeating. I had a friend of mine text me on Sunday. They were at Easter brunch in Florida, and Ernie Els was at the table next to him. And I got that text, and I was bummed out because Ernie should be up here. You know, Ernie should be flying up to Augusta and playing on Sunday and getting ready for the Masters. And the fact that he's not, it just, listen, the window's short, and you only have so many times. It was crazy. The one player I've heard mention that in his press conference this week was Colin Morikawa, of all players, who's, you know, one of the youngest players in the field.
You know, everybody always says, oh, he'll have another chance. I think that's something that, like, we always talk about with, like, oh, Sungjae didn't get it done last Masters. He'll get way more chances.
Exactly.
But the thing about golf is, like, it is a fleet. It can be fleeting. We just saw it with Jordan Spieth. We see it with players all the time that just lose it. And, you know, we saw it where Seve played his best golf at a young age. Like, the chances, you might not get another one. We always like to say, oh, you know, he'll get way more chances at it. It's good that this guy won because, you know, so-and-so has, you know, 10 of these. But it's really hard to win one of these four events every year. Like, everybody wants to win one of the four. And, you know, that's the thing. There aren't many chances.
I watched the Tiger doc this week on HBO. I hadn't watched it yet. And I watched it, and it to just kind of go back and remember what Tiger did in the majors. And obviously that was his focus, but, you know, any great player, that's their focus. And the fact that he just would win them all the time, he would show up the favorite and win them different ways. And I called you a couple days ago and was just talking about Hoylake and, you know, him hitting iron off all those tees. Like, the fact that you can do that and pull it off and be that consistent. And you brought up a point. You said the difference in the mentality then, which wasn't that long ago, versus what we see now in modern golf. Bryson's press conference was just on. He was talking. He got asked and was talking about different approaches or angles he might take off the tees. And it's just so different that, you know, it's I want to hit driver unless I can't. is the mentality now. And you know, not what 15 years ago, it was, I need to find fairways. That's the best chance at success.
I know you're a big basketball fan. I'm a big basketball fan, but Tiger in a way is kind of reminiscent of the way Jordan or LeBron has won across different eras of the game and in drastically different styles, where both of them did it with sheer athleticism early and talent. And then as they've aged, they've gotten it done different ways, where, you know, LeBron's just like kind of like a bully now. He's big, and but it's not just the, you know, in Miami where he was just on a whole different athletic level than everybody else, and he was thinned down. Like, now he's a little bit more of a thick boy. He goes down there and he still, you know, reads a defense unlike anybody else and knows where the ball's going, where the defense is coming from. But like, Tiger was that way, where he's won across different generations, different styles, and playing different styles. You know, like Hoylake, like nobody would do that now, like where he just hit iron everywhere, but he won that way.
It's wild. And when you watch the replays of the way he approached it and the shots he hit, I was telling you, you know, this guy's hitting a blade 2-iron. I mean, I had a blade Titleist 2-iron in when I had kind of the driver yips in my early 20s. And, you know, you miss it sometimes and you hit it off the toe and it goes like 205, you know. Yeah. And the fact that this guy is hitting a blade 2-iron in the center of the face in the middle of every fairway was wild. And again, to your point, it's that mentality. What do I need to do in this game against this team? You know, I've been trying to think of what's the most impressive thing in sport. And you brought up the LeBron thing. And I think I've landed on this. I think the most impressive thing in sport is being a quarterback and winning Super Bowls on different teams, because you go to different coaches, different staff, different approach, different mentality, different players. You've got to get the best out of a completely different line. You know, you've got to get your defense on at least to a level that can be competitive, because they've got to be able to pull their weight. And so when you look at like a Peyton Manning, you know, winning multiple, you know, Super Bowls on different teams, or Tom Brady, and you think about how hard that must be, it brings up to what you said. It's Tiger won early in his career when he was longer than everybody else, and then he won a major where he didn't hit driver. And, you know, and then you watch 2019, and it was this – it was a different looking golf swing. It was a different looking Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
And somehow the mentality, the first tee, you know, the whole story about Tony Finau saying he asked him a question, didn't really get a response. And all of those things might be different, but it's the same mind. And again, that's the key to it. That's why tennis players are so great on different surfaces. It's because they're the same. It's the same mind. It's knowing what to do. Tiger is the best ever at knowing what to do to get it done, because Tiger knew it was a 72 hole battle, not just a 1 day, 2 day, 3 day deal.
I can't remember who tweeted out on that Sunday morning where, you know, Tiger is, his approach and mentality and relationships with his peers has changed so much in this last chapter of his career, where, you know, he was friendly with everybody. And then I remember somebody tweeted out, I can't remember who, but it was like, Tiger's got that look we haven't seen in a while, like that early Tiger look, and where on Sunday he wasn't friends with anybody.
No.
And I think that's like, at the end of the day, when you get down to it, all-time competitors, they hate losing more than they love winning.
And it's the ones they remember, right? It's the ones that came so close. I mean, it's something I've always wanted to ask Tiger, you know, which major that you lost hurt you the most? You know, which one did you feel like you should have won?
It's got to be Y.E. Yang, right?
It's probably easy to lean on the Y.E. Yang one, because he was so close and actually missed some late putts. But, you know, there's probably some Masters in there where he feels like he could have got more out of it. I mean, I go to 2010, you know, that press conference after in 10 where, you know, what, he finished fourth, you know, first golf tournament in however many months. And you could tell he was frustrated. I mean, there was no positive he was taken from that, finishing fourth. He was bummed that there was people that beat him. So I would always love to know which one he felt like that. Because something that I found so interesting, you know, I do the podcast Get a Grip with Max Homa. And Max said after the Waste Management, you know, Max went on this great run this year, even before the win at Riviera. And he said, you know, I feel like I had the game to win at the Waste Management. And I think he finished 41st that week. You know, he didn't finish second or fourth or eighth. You know, he finished in the 40s in this PGA Tour event. But he said, my ball striking was so good that I feel like I should have won that week. It's so crazy how thin the line is, right?
I completely agree. Like, that's the thing I miss most about not being out covering these events occasionally in person, is when you watch it in person, you realize, like, God, it's just a shot here, a shot there. And Augusta, of all the places they play year in, year out, might be one of the where that's magnified the most. It's like,
definitely.
Did you pull off the shot on 13, or did you hit in the water? You make double instead of a potential birdie. Three shots. And it, all of a sudden, the whole fabric of the tournament is completely different. With this golf course where, you know, there's a car crash everywhere, and that's not the best term, but just a bad big number around every corner. That's the thing about this tournament, is the line between excellence and disaster is so thin.
And we see it, and that is, again, what's so great, is I feel like we see it to a certain extent every year. I mean, even in the November Masters, you know, there were opportunities, right? And the golf course played so different. But, I mean, you've got to go get it, even when it is playing that gettable. And so it's such a different mentality. I feel like, and I don't want to sneak into our five things that we're going to get to.
You could kick it off here, you know, if you want to kick it off. We each came up with five things. We'll go down them. And we'll probably have some overlap. We haven't talked about what our five things are.
So I want to, real quick, you know, you're talking about the thin line and the mentality of this golf course. And what I love about the Masters, and what I think is so special and cool about it, first, obviously, it's the lone major that we see at the same golf course every year. But it's the veteran players talking about Augusta National. And when they talk about Augusta National, it's always about the mistakes and avoiding the mistakes. And you know, sometimes I laugh about this each and every year, and I've done it since I was a kid. I laugh about 13, you know, because when the hole location is back right on 13, everybody hits it front left. And when the pole location's front left, everybody hits it back right, you know, because you just can't err on the wrong side. We did a deep dive on the 1991 Masters I was telling you about. There was this great quote Jack Nicklaus talked about. So the golf course was playing pretty gettable in 1991. And Nicklaus in the second round was very much in contention, and he hits it in the water on 12. The hole location was, I believe it was front right in that second round, and he went after it because he said the conditions made him think it was a gettable shot. And he hit it in the water on 12, and he makes triple, and he, of course, birdied the next four holes, as Jack tends to do, but he makes triple there at 12, and that kind of ended his chances. And he said, he goes, you know, in a different conditioned Masters, I'm not sure I would have tried to pull that golf shot off. So again, it's just, you see the flag on 12 and it's just floating over there on the right side, and you've got a 9-iron if you're Brooks Koepka or you're Molinari or you're Tony Finau, and you go, I can hit this thing to 10 feet. And the moment you get out of what you have to think on this golf course is when the chances of the jacket go away. I want to start my five things, though, with something I feel like you'll appreciate. You're a guy, much like me, that likes weird stats. So I found this one. We are in a current run at the Masters of the return of the longer first name winners, okay?
Whoa.
Yeah, oh yeah. So from 1994 to 2014, nobody with a first name longer than five letters won the Masters. It was all short names. From 2015 to now, we've had four winners with first names of six letters or longer. That brings in some of the players that I know you love in and around the game. The long first name is back.
Yeah, I think that's good for like Christian Bazadenhout.
He was one of the ones I'd circle, but I was looking at some of the longer names.
Yeah, it's not good for a guy named Lee or Rory.
Well, they had their run, though. You know, lefties have success at Augusta National. Apparently, the shorter the name, it helps.
Trying to think of who else, like what big name. I guess six is questionable on length. You know, I'm going to nitpick there. Like six letters, I feel like it's pretty standard. but Patrick Reed's got to love it. Dustin, I mean, six. There's a lot of six-letter. You know, almost all the top 10 in the world outside of Ja Rahm is six letters.
Bad for your boy. Yeah. Cantlay's got a chance, you know, the return. Bryson has seen this long first name resurgence help his chances at Augusta as well. So Fitzy, you know.
The hard-hitting analysis here. I love
Cyril it. Hatton. I mean, just going down the list, Sungjae. I mean, this 20-year run, is it thankfully for those guys, it's ended.
I think Tyrrell's going to get in his own way. The major championships haven't aligned with Tyrrell. So
no. Maybe this is the week he changes it.
Exactly. I love that. You know, that's a good, you know, non-serious, but serious first starter.
You're looking, this is what Andy does, is he was looking to the top right, which means he was thinking of names. I could tell he was thinking of short or long names. I'm not sure which way you were going, but I could see the workings in the brain.
Well, I've got a second screen, so I was looking at the second screen at the World Golf Rankings.
Okay.
So, I'd like to think that I could just pull all those names off the top of my head, but
I
can't.
Like that.
One of the things I'm watching is the old guys. Obviously, I'm a big Lee Westwood fan. But besides Wes, he was looking for his first. You got Justin Rose, Adam Scott, Sergio, Louis Oosthuizen, all these guys who have had a ton of success. Some of them have won at Augusta. Others have been extraordinarily close all the time. All of them are getting into a little bit of their twilight of their years. Louis's 38. He's almost a little unfair to throw in this bucket. But all these other guys who we've watched for decades now play at Augusta National are in their 40s. And, you know, 225, especially in the case of Louis, Sergio, Scott, and Rose, 225 players have won one major championship. 83 have won two or more. So you're getting, you know, that adding that second major championship really does propel you into a different class of player. You know, like it's one thing, and this is the rich, you know, this is like being a 100 millionaire and getting to the billionaire level, I feel like, in golf. But there aren't that many guys that have won multiple major championships. And I think in this era of golf, we're going to see less of the 8+ major champions, six plus major champions. I think they're going to be rarer. So getting to two is such a big deal in terms of legacy when you're looking at the post-Tiger era of golf.
Yeah, I've called this era the era of the one-time major winner for a few years now. And I think that's only getting easier to call the run. I mean, when you look at some of the players, I mean, I don't call any major win a fluke. You know, I mean, obviously you've got to play really well to win a major.
Not even Jimmy Walker.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Jason Day tried his hardest to win that. You know, I mean, he makes eagle, two iron to make eagle and force Jimmy to make par there at the last. I mean, he was being pushed his hardest. I mean, you think about Jason Duffner and Keegan Bradley, and there's these players that, you know, I think you'd consider a notable player that's probably going to end their career with one major win. I love the idea of who can get to two. And I think, you know, this is a golf course that favors experience. And this is a place that favors experience. And when you're Louis, you're Adam Scott, you're Sergio, you're Justin Rose, you're in that crop of players that obviously understand Augusta National and understand to a point what we talked a little bit about with Tiger, right? It's understanding this is 4 days. You know, the first day is important, but it's not overly important. Just get yourself out there and just get things going. Don't shoot something nasty. Don't come out there and shoot 39 on the front on Thursday. And so, yeah, it's going to be, I don't know. I have a feeling, you know, that I think that some of the names you mentioned could really get in the mix. I mean, you obviously Lee Westwood is a name that hasn't won a major yet, but I feel like he falls right under this, right? A guy that tends to play well at this golf course, totally understands. It's been playing some great golf this year. So it's just this year, 2021, we've seen this run of older guys playing well. You know, we've got a couple of guys in their 40s that won in the early part of the wraparound season and Brian Gay and Stuart Sink. Obviously, we've seen some great play from Sergio. And, yeah, I mean, we're just kind of waiting for some of the other names to step up. But it's I always feel like this is a place – I mean, we saw Freddie Couples do it for, what, like 30 years? It's a place that if you get Augusta, you can play it. And unfortunately for a lot of the players, if you don't get Augusta, if you're a Lee Trevino or a Martin Keimer, it just doesn't ever make sense to you.
I think the other thing with if the weather holds off, I saw there might be some rain Friday, Saturday. If there's no rain and it plays firm and fast the way they're talking about it, I think that is only going to play into the experienced players' hands more this year, just because soft Augusta is a lot different than firm Augusta, and all of a sudden being in the right place is magnified so much because, you know, chipping from the wrong spot is infinitely harder when the greens have a little fire to them.
My second thing is obviously something I think a lot of people are focused on, Andy, and it's not some sort of a surprising thing, but I think it's what my number one thing I'm circling is just Spieth. I mean, I just want to see Spieth at Augusta again. Watching Jordan Spieth play Augusta was poetic early in his career. He was the next guy, you know. I mean, I feel like when you start to tick off the names that just seem to get here every year and they were going to be in contention. I mean, they might not win, but they were going to be in contention. It was Jordan Spieth. I saw there was this crazy stat that our boy Justin Ray sent out. Spieth has already led or co-led 9 rounds at the Masters. There's only 4 players all time with more: Jack, Palmer, Player, and Woods. And Tiger's 10.
It's unbelievable.
That's the number. If he has one more, he ties Tiger's number at Augusta National. You know, obviously, getting the win is getting the win. I don't think I'm going to go either way with that. If he wins at Valero or doesn't win at Valero, I don't think it hurts or helps his chances this week. But I'm excited to see Jordan Spieth play this golf course. To me, it's what we're supposed to see in the modern game. This is the next Masters guy.
The thing with Spieth too is, like, even when he was in dark places the last couple of Masters, not playing well, he still would get around, still making cuts. Like, I think the thing that amazes me always, and with no player I've ever, you get this playing competitive, like playing golf at a fairly high level. Like, there are guys that you just watch play and you're like, I don't understand how he just did what he did with, like, I imagine it's so frustrating for players that play with Spieth because, you know, you can walk off the golf course and feel like you've hit it so much better than him. And I think this happened with Rory famously when he played with Spieth, and Spieth is all over the place. He's in these weird spots, but he's never in horrible spots. Like, he knows where to put it around the green so he can get up and down, and then he just takes advantage of, and I think that's the thing. He's got this patience where he knows there are birdies out there to be made, but the key is his will to not give shots up is so incredible, and his ability to shoot 67 when you think about almost any other player in the same positions would have shot 74. You know, like, it is an astounding thing. The other thing, I'm just so happy he's back. I think going through what he just went through is going to be such a big thing for the rest of his career, because I think it teaches him that it's not a given, that is not, like, necessarily a foregone conclusion that you're going to be one of the best players in the world all the time. And the fragility of the game and all the work that has to go in, I think it's just going to help him in the long run going through this doldrum that he went through.
So we've always tried to find the next Tiger. I think we all labeled Rory that. I mean, it was easy to do. You know, Rory drove the ball unlike really anything we'd ever seen in our entire lives when he first came out, and still to this day drives it incredibly well. Homa tells a story about playing with him with the Wells Fargo, and he really never missed a driver all day. Instead, on 18, he kind of hits one, and Max said he was going, okay, finally. And he said it starts drawing back middle of the fairway. He hit like a 12-yard draw there, not a 6-yard draw. And he was like, this guy's a machine. This is crazy. But, you know, why is it that we have continued to skip over Spieth as the next Tiger? I mean, their games are so similar, right? I mean, Tiger was longer. You know, Tiger was one of the longest guys in golf, much longer than everybody he was playing against in his prime especially. But never a great driver of the golf ball. Would miss the drives in the right spot, much like what you were just saying about Jordan Spieth. I mean, I always think about where Tiger hit it on 11 at Augusta, you know, during his prime. It's like he'd always miss it right because he knew he could make par. He knew he's not going to hit it left. He's going to make 6, right? And was an unbelievable iron player. Spieth's an unbelievable iron player. And their refusal to make bogey, right? I mean, the mentality of, I'm not going to make bogey here. I don't care what I have to do. I go back to 15 all the time. You know, that third round where he makes double on 17 on Saturday, you know, he hits it over the green on 18, and all of a sudden you're kind of sitting there going, this could get bad for Spieth, right? This is not what he wants to do. And he hits that shot, that flop shot from over the green at 18 at Augusta, and makes par and obviously goes on to win. I feel like Spieth's comparisons to Tiger are as close as anybody since Tiger's prime, yet we're always searching. We're looking at Dustin. We're looking at Rory. Now we're looking at Bryson. And I think the guy's been there the whole time.
I think it's because the number one easiest thing to pick out from Tiger at an early age was his sheer overpowering nature comparison to other pros, and because
but it was
that
his
was
mind, though, right?
I know. This is, you know, I think over time as he developed, I think like Spieth is more like a later Tiger Woods, like maybe 2013, 2011 Tiger Woods, okay, where there had been other, but like that sheer overpowering nature, and I think the thing is that nobody's Tiger, because nobody's been able to combine all of those things.
Right.
Nobody's got combined the work ethic, the iron play, the power, the incredible short game, the, you know, what we both talked about, the, you know, refusal to give away shots. I think everybody's got some Tiger qualities, but in general, these great players are all missing one of them. Like, you look at Rory, it's like, God, those like the short iron play just leaves you wanting more. But then you watch Tiger play in his prime short irons. It was like, okay, well, he's in the fairway. This is going to be 10 feet.
Yeah.
You know, even if it wasn't 10 feet all the time, that's how you felt. There was an air of inevitability versus like Rory's got this air of unpredictability. Rory's one of mine. And, you know, the guy's, his record at Augusta is outstanding. His record in general, like even when he's in these doldrums of struggles, like you look at his results and you're like, God, he finishes like top 10 every week. But Rory, at this point, I have no clue. Any result would surprise me. I kind of like the fact that he's coming in here. There's no expectation on him for like the first time that I can remember in the lead into the Masters. Nobody is like, oh, Rory is a favorite. Everybody is kind of, and I think not having that bright spotlight on him might be able to help. And like, as you know, now dealing with winter, sometimes when you don't have expectations as a golfer, like you come out and you're always surprised. Like the first round, you're like, ah, I didn't hit it that bad. Like but you had zero expectations. I think with Rory, one of the things that he's really struggled with, and I think this is, you know, where we could talk about differences besides the short iron play with Tiger, is like, I think Rory struggles a little bit with the heightened expectation.
I think it's so wild to think about the confidence, right, for Rory McIlroy, considering what he's done with the golf ball his entire life. And the fact that he, you know, mentions things, maybe I'm not as good as I used to be, you know, after the PGA Championship. I mean, you know, Rory's one of those guys that gives us everything we ever asked for in a professional athlete. And then sometimes we grill him for it, which is ridiculous. But, you know, he's just unbelievably honest and he talks about everything and he doesn't shy away from any subject. And there's a ton of respect, you know, on my end, on your end, you know, people that cover the game, to get these things from a guy that is one of the top names and faces in the sport is refreshing. I mean, I think about Dame Lillard, you know, my favorite player in the NBA now, and just how every time Dame talks, it's impactful. You know, every time he says something, I feel like I'm listening. I want to go back and find clips from the night before if I fell asleep, because I live on the East Coast and these games don't end until midnight.
Yeah.
And so, by the way,
it's a struggle.
Stayed up for the national championship game last night. Stayed up for the whole thing. It was like 11:45 when I went to bed. I don't know how people do it. But yeah, I appreciate everything Rory says. You know, for me, I think you nailed it. It's having no clue. You know, the problem is that you say what you said about expectations, and I agree with you that he's coming in with lessened expectations. I think about a couple of years ago, you know, coming in after the win at the Players and the way he'd been playing, I think he had 7 top 10s in a row headed into the Masters, and we were all going, this is going to be it, right? And it wasn't, as it continues to be not it. But the moment that first tee shot happens on Thursday and he makes his first birdie and the first time he's on that leaderboard, I think the entire narrative changes. I think we all change when Rory does what we expect him to do. You know, the issue for Rory is he's got to get off to a better start. We've seen how brutal he's been in these opening rounds at the majors the last few years. And then we're actually on Tuesday's Live From, we're going to dive into, I'm calling it that round. Rory continues to have that round at Augusta. And that's the thing he's got to somehow delete from his game plan is there's been just one round, 1-9, one run for Rory that's basically ruined his chances. And no matter what he does on Saturday or Sunday when he's 8 or 9 or 10 back, it's just not going to be enough. That's the difference, Andy, now, I feel like, with the talent on the PGA Tour and with the talent in professional golf, is I think it used to be a lot easier to make up for a bad round, you know, especially a bad round early. And now, at a place like Augusta National, when it's playing a little softer, like we saw in November, you just can't afford to shoot over par. I mean, if you shoot over par, you're not going to win. It's just you can't make up the ground. There's too many good players that are always locked in. So, you know, I was going through this, you know, to look through some of the Rory rounds. It's like He's, you know, he's eight back, 10 back, seven back after the opening round or after the first two rounds.
Yeah.
You got to be perfect going into the weekend if you're going to have even a chance to win. I know Kyle Porter jokes about this all the time. You know, it's, well, if Rory shoots 65 on Sunday, it's like people don't shoot 65 on Sunday, you know? So he's got to shoot 70 on Thursday.
Yeah.
Don't worry about shooting 65 on Sunday. Shoot 71 on Thursday, and then you'll have a chance.
Exactly. And I think that comes with that heightened expectations. It makes it hard to get off to a good start. I look at championship golf too, and I think that there's always a 6 to 9 hole stretch outside of the just utterly dominant performances. In every major, the guy that wins has a 6 to 9 hole stretch where he does not hit the ball very well, and the wheels can come off, and it becomes about how they manage and get through that stretch, whether they make bogeys and doubles, or if they make those 10 footers, those 12 footers that save those clutch pars that feel like birdies after the places they've been. Like, it is so pivotal, and it's okay for Rory to have that bad stretch out of the gates. But what it's turned into is like what you said. It's like 41 on a nine. It's like you should.
Right, Rory 39.
McIlroy should not shoot 39 on nine holes, especially at Augusta, where the par fives, he hasn't been feasting on the par fives the way he used to feast on them, I feel like.
Well, and one more thing on this, and then I'll throw out another one at you, is to your point, and I agree with you, that stretch, you know, that run you talk about where everybody has them. I mean, outside of, you know, a few of the incredible dominant wins or, you know, the great runs we've seen, I agree with you. There's always that stretch, right? What that says to me is short game, because your short game's got to get you out of those stretches. You know, you've got to be able to get it up and down from a bunker. You've got to be able to make a 12-footer for par. And when we circle the parts of Rory's game that's lacking, that's less than, those are the parts. I mean, he's just never been a great scrambler. And he's never been a great putter. And so when you look at those things, when you're not hitting it great, you've got to lean on the short game to get you out of it until you find it again. And these pros find it in 5 holes or 8 holes or 9 holes. They find the swing again. They find what was not working. I mean, go back, you know, you go back to 97. And again, we've talked Tiger a lot. But just to go back to 97 and think about Tiger opening his Masters and shooting 40, and you're kind of going, okay, you know, he didn't have it. This is strange, you know, but he could, when he found it, it was 30 on the way in. Right. And when he found it, it's still getting in at under par. And so, and to me, that's so much about the short game. Sure. He could, you know, attack these par fives and hit it close on 15, like he did and things like that. But it's the short game that saves you. And when you look at any great player, any great run they've had to win a major or to kind of keep the ship afloat, it's almost always, you know, getting the ball up and down in a couple of bad spots, making a couple of great par saves, and then you get a chance to make the birdie or eagle.
Yeah, the small things, like, it's easy to look at strokes gained and say, oh, short game's the least important part of the game. But when you reach the highest level of the game and the highest level of championships with the best players in the world, the littlest things are the things that separate the great and the winners from the guys that finished 10th. Like the line, like we've talked about already in this podcast, that line is so thin, and it's just the simple little things. I even think back to like the ANWA just this last weekend. Like Migliaccio, she hit it in the bunker like so many people did on 18, but she gets it out, she's still got a wedge in, and she got up and down unlike a lot of people from that position. It's like, it's when you have to chip out because you're in a bad spot and you get up and down and you make a par and it feels like you made a birdie. Like, those are the things that just in a competitive and championship setting are the things that just make you go, because it's so mental. You have to have that positive vibe. And Rory, more so than almost anybody, is like, he is so easy to tell when things are going and when he's
yep.
got it going. Like, in a way, he's a little bit of a front runner, you know?
One of my things is we have as good a shot as ever to see a back-to-back winner.
I have this on my list.
Yeah, you know, you go back to 2016, as good a chance as ever to see somebody win back-to-back. But, you know, I mean, who better to do this than Dustin? I haven't seen it since 2002 with Tiger. Hard to do. Not a lot of back-to-back winners at any major championship, much less the Masters. But I feel like this is as good a chance as we're ever going to see somebody do it again.
Do you feel, this is kind of what my note on DJ was, do you feel in a weird way that he's like flying under the radar. He's the number one player in the world. He won in dominant fashion, like a record-setting performance. And somehow, like the air, the vacuum of coverage, you've got Spieth and you've got Bryson, and JT is obviously a favorite, but like somehow DJ is not really being talked about as much as I think we should. And I don't understand, like, sure, he didn't play well at the WGC or the Players, but you know, the Players, he can't hit driver a lot of places there. Like it kind of mitigates and then he didn't make it out of his pool in match play. But like we just went through a stretch where he went from the PGA on, he went T2, 1, 2, second, T3rd, which was a win at the Tour Championship, a shadow T3rd win in the net division, T6, T2, first, T11, first, T8. I mean, like that...
It's insane.
We're like 2 months removed from that stretch of golf, and somehow it seems like he's kind of flying under the radar.
And the best part about it is, Andy, is I don't think it matters either way to Dustin, right? I think there's so many players. You brought up Rory. I think that helps. I think over the last few years, it was nice for Jordan Spieth not to be, you know, captain featured group and to be the guy that was kind of featured in every tournament every single week. We allowed him to kind of breathe and try to figure things out on the golf course. For Dustin, I don't think it matters. I mean, I think Dustin goes about his business the same each and every week, whether it's a major championship, it's a PGA Tour event, if he's playing, you know, a charity event, whatever the thing may be. I just feel like Dustin's mentality is very similar and his approach is very similar. Like Dustin's one of those guys to me that has figured out his process, right? I think there's so many players still searching for their process. You know, they're still searching for what's the best for me this week. I'm working on this. I'm trying to tweak this. To me, Dustin has figured out what works best for him. And, you know, some week he goes out there and has a great week, and some weeks, rarely, he doesn't. But yes, I absolutely get that feeling of Dustin kind of flying under the radar as the defending champion. You know, he speaks today with the media, so, you know, we'll get some stuff out of that as well. They obviously have the champions dinner on Tuesday night, so we'll get stuff out of that as well. But for a guy that just won a few months ago here to kind of snag, to me, the really important major championship for his career, the second one, as you said, kind of off the top, to kind of open the floodgates, if you will, for Dustin Johnson to maybe win 5 or 6 majors in a latter part of his career, I do sense that he's a little bit of the forgotten number one.
And that, just like we talked about with 2 majors, getting to 3.
Crazy.
Especially when you put up his PGA Tour resume, which is just astounding. His WGC, his playoff record. I mean, he only wins big events. And if he gets to 3 majors, it is a... He is probably by far the greatest player of his generation if you take 10 years on either side. I know he might butt into Tiger, but from Ricky to Sergio era, he's by far the best. And it's preposterous that Ogilvy talked about this on my pod after the last Masters. He told a story about playing a practice round with DJ at Augusta. It was like maybe his first time out there. And he talked about how he was just, he played 9 holes, or I can't remember exactly how many holes. And he walked off and he goes, oh my God, I just saw like the guy that's built to play at this golf course. You know, he's like, it just was so easy for him. And I think that's the thing, is he's had just unbelievable stretch of top 10s. He can play bad and finish 6th here.
Again, kind of going back to what is so cool about the Masters in terms of the Players. You are a get it or don't get it player. Dustin is in that camp of get it. I mean, each and every year he's going to be in contention. We know what he's done on these par fives. You talk about Rory struggling on the par fives. You know, Dustin feasts on the par fives at Augusta. He always has. I mean, you know, when you combine strength and obviously incredible accuracy with the irons, that's going to happen. But the way Dustin plays the par fives makes me think of that 2000, 2001, 2002 stretch for Tiger when he'd play these par fives, and it just seemed like he'd have 10 feet for eagle each and every hole.
Yeah, so 46 players have 3 majors or more. So it gets from 84 or 83 to 46, pretty good jump. It basically cuts in half every major you add, that number.
Andy, I got something that's concerning as my next thing here. It's concerning as a left-hander. Do we have a serious lefty this year?
What about Big Shot Bob?
That well, so I, you know, it's I mean, Phil yeah, obviously up and here. Mike Weir's here. Brian Harman's in the field, who's been playing great, and then Bob McIntyre, as you mentioned. But we had that great run of southpaws at Augusta National, and then I'm a little concerned with the crop we have now. I mean, Phil is, you never know what the heck Phil's going to do. I mean, you know, I think Brian Harman could play Augusta well. I think Bob McIntyre could play Augusta well, but gone are the days where, you know, one of the top two or three favorites was a left-hander.
We've got a dearth of left-handed talent in the, you know, I can't think of any young left-handers outside McIntyre. There's a really good Australian, young Australian, like a teenager who just turned pro, Elvis Smiley, who I think is a left-hander. But I can't think of many high-profile young Americans that are lefties. I apologize to anybody that I'm disregarding here, but all the big young names are all right-handers. This is a sad day for you lefties.
Yeah, Akshay is kind of the guy we're leaning on right now. I mean, he's Akshay's got a chance, right, if he could find it. But I mean, outside of that, yeah, it's we had a great run. The lefties had a great run. We leaned on Bubba a lot. You know, Bubba was unbelievable. And you never know, right, with Bubba. Who knows what he could do when he shows up. But it was a stretch. I'll say that. I feel like our great stretch might be ending.
You, the thing, too, is like you would think that there'd be more of a lefty explosion. Because when you were growing up, lefty equipment was like hard to find still. And
so
now
hard.
All these kids, they could get lefty equipment is readily available, in some cases more available than right-handed equipment. And now we've got this, and where are all the lefties? It could be a great investigative journalism piece. Do you think there's something, maybe golf coaches can't coach lefties as well as righties because there are so few left-handed golf coaches. Maybe this is where the deep-rooted problems exist.
The when I was in high school, the only golf club I really wanted in my life was the Titleist PT 3-wood. Do you remember that thing? I think it was the one.
I still have one. I have one. Yeah, it's
the
amazing.
Head was the size of like a dime. You know, that thing was tiny. And I always wanted one lefty, and I could never find it. I'm pretty sure. So there was a kid named Drew Pig who was a lefty out of the Dallas area. I think he played for one of the Plano schools. I remember, I believe he had one, and I remember seeing it at AJGA tournament, and I'm not really much of a thief. I don't really like to consider myself someone that wants to go steal things from people, but the thought at least crossed my mind to go, you know, I could just go walk by this guy's bag, and all of a sudden I'd have the PT 3-wood in my hands. But that was the lefty club of all the lefty clubs that I wish I would have had in my back in my heyday.
I occasionally put the PT in the bag, but I need to be in a groove, like where I know the last few times out, I've been playing well. When you put it, the ball's on the ground and you're hitting like a second shot into the par five, you're just looking at it and you're like, please hit this airborne. Please hit an airborne.
Well, that,
I mean, the head is like the size of the ball.
That's the difference in... So and then you go to the other side of it at the same time, right? You had the Tight Lies and the Orlemar 3-woods come out.
Orlemar was incredible.
Paper thin, and those were awesome on the fairways. But when you had to tee them up, I would always stand over them going, "Don't make a dummy mark. Don't make a dummy mark. Don't make a dummy mark." You know, because you had to have the smallest peg in golf history to peg it up with those things. So we needed to find the great combo of those fairway woods.
I will die on the hill that the Sonar Tech was the greatest 3-wood of all time, the SSO3. I played golf with somebody with one recently. I still have mine. They're in the garage. I haven't used it. But somebody had one, and they were playing with it, and I was so envious. Now that I think about it, I'm back. I might be putting it back in the bag.
This is what people wanted to hear. What do you have as one of your five things?
I've got the young crop of players. So I'm looking at Sungjae, Morikawa, Hovland, Neiman, all these guys. They've now, for the most part, all had one trip around Augusta, which we know, like, hey, expectations are what they are the first year. Like, get in contention, but, you know, likely winning your first time around, so slim. But we see, like we've talked about with Spieth, like these guys that just gravitate towards Augusta success, where they just play this golf course better than their peers. And I'm really interested to see if we start to see some trends emerge The big one would be, does Sungjae Im contend again? If he does, is he this Augusta Iron Man of these young, you know, 23, 24-year-olds that have kind of exploded into golf and are household names now? Or is it Morikawa? Like, Morikawa seems to have all the skills that you want in terms of a Augusta thoroughbred, you know, the iron play. Obviously, putter can be a little shaky. I think short game's kind of the underrated thing at Augusta, though, is the one, and that's where I love Sungjae.
Pitching. It's pitching, right? I mean, I always say we talk so much about putting, right, at Augusta National, and we've seen unbelievable putters win at this golf course, but we've seen some pretty bad putters, you know, in terms of statistics in professional golf win here. I mean, you think about Adam Scott of recent late, and you think about Sergio.
But Sergio is great pitcher. Unbelievable.
Great
like
pitcher.
Maybe the most underrated pitcher of the golf ball of all time, because everybody, like, the way he drove it, the way he hit irons was mesmerizing, but the way he pitched, his short game has been so underrated for 20 years.
So I want to piggyback on what you just said as one of my things, and one of my things is Justin Thomas, and it kind of plays into the same thing, because Jordan Spieth maybe tainted the way we look at young players who play Augusta. I mean, we saw what Tiger did in 97. Took a long time before we got another young player kind of bursting on the scene, having a chance to win his first Masters and then winning his second, right? For Justin Thomas, it's taken a little bit of time to understand Augusta, which is a natural progression. I mean, that's what typically happens at this golf course. So JT at the Masters, 2016, T39th, 2017, T22nd, 2018, T17th, 2019, T12th, 2020, fourth.
Is that a good trend?
Yeah, I would say it's helpful. I would say if you own stock in Justin Thomas, you're making money. It's life looks better than worse. So, you know, when that's the way it's going, obviously it's a guy that's getting more comfortable in understanding the golf course. You know, maybe we play up at some places experience. I think this is one of the places where we probably don't talk about experience enough, because obviously it's huge, right? I mean, understanding what to do, you know, Lee Westwood talked about it in his press conference, just about the experience around this place. Bryson talked about trying to get more comfortable with his iron shots, his approaches in to greens, and making sure he's in the right areas where the hole locations are going to be cut. So when you talk about experience, this is the place you've got to talk about it. For JT, I mean, and now he's got to finish third, second, or win, right, to continue that upward trend. But I feel like he's in a place where that could easily happen. So for me, when you talk about these young players, sure, it'd be great if Sungjae went out there and won this week. And I think Sungjae's going to have an unbelievable chance at winning with the way he's played at Augusta National in November, with the way he's played this year. But for a lot of guys, it's looking at what Justin Thomas has been able to do over the last few years and trying to replicate what JT has done. Let's improve each and every year, and then we can get to a position where we have a chance to actually win this thing.
With JT, last year, I thought he played as well as DJ. It was just a few big mistakes that cost him. It was, you know, he made a double or a triple in one of the early rounds that, and it's just these little things. But when you look at all of his skills, he drives it unbelievably well. His iron play he's one of the five best players in the world with his irons. And then he's got an unbelievable short game. Some of those shots around the greens that he hits are just outstanding. And he's got a different style. Like, it's not, everything's not just like, it doesn't seem like everything's just auto lob wedge. He hits some really crafty little bump and runs. He has the requisite shots and the shot making ability that I think it suits so well at Augusta. And I think where the struggle has been, and I don't know if this is real or not, but when I think about players that utilize green reading books heavily, maybe highest usage on tour, he falls into the bucket. And I think that is a big deal playing golf when you're used to playing with a green reading book and going to Augusta where they are not allowed. It takes time to learn those greens. Like, then that's why maybe experience matters here more than anywhere else, is one of the factors is, like, you don't get this tool that tells you contours. Like, I know they're very complex to use, but, you know, JT and Bryson is another guy. Bryson, you know, he's probably better at using a green reading book than anybody in the world. And he doesn't get to use that. And he talked about it I saw a clip that a follower sent from the Aussie Fox Sports, where he talked about, like, how it's a challenge. Like, I used to read greens when I was in junior golf. Like, that's the last time Bryson played without green reading books, junior golf, except for this tournament once a year. So it's definitely, and you can point to JT, like where he was historically like one of the worst putters ever at Augusta his first few years out here. And all of a sudden that's turning around. He's comfortable. And I think that's, like you said, a perfect example of the progression of a young player. And I think he will be a factor at Masters for maybe decades to come.
He made four sixes in 2020 for the week. Four sixes. If you remember, he bogeyed 15, he bogeyed 13 one round, bogeyed 2 1 round, made a double on one in the second round. So, I mean, he made the numbers you can't make, right? I mean, this kind of goes back to things you can't do, right? And you just kind of can't bogey 13 and 15. And you definitely can't bogey multiple times throughout the week if you want to have a chance. That's how important those holes are, especially in a week like this where we think it's going to play tougher. You've got to take advantage of the holes you can take advantage of. So that will be something that'll be worth watching, right, is how he's going to get around and how he can avoid those mistakes. And also, I mean, you said it, you've said it multiple times about being a great pitcher. I think Justin Thomas is an unbelievable pitcher. I don't know a guy that holds out more from off the green than JT.
It's something when you're a great ball striker like Sergio or like JT is, I think that the ability, the pitching, because we don't see it that much, gets overshadowed. It's just, he's so good. It's so much fun to watch him hit shots around greens. My last one, the AMs. This is the smallest group of AMs we've had in forever. I feel like they must feel lonely. You know, they don't have, it's talk about like, you don't want to finish last in AMs. There's only, what, three of them?
Right. It's such a condensed battle for low AM, and being low AM at the Masters is such a huge thing. It's such a historically huge thing. I mean, I always think about the moments in those, you know, 4-day tournaments, right? At the Masters. And I think about the US Open. I think about the Open Championship, about being low AM there and the list of the historically great players that tick that off their list. It's really hard to win US amateurs. It's really hard to win U.S. junior amateurs. I mean, when you go through the list of the players that we talk about these days, how few of them won U.S. amateurs, right? Dustin Johnson never won one. John Rahm never won one. Justin Thomas never won one. I mean, kind of going down that list, right? But to be low am is something attainable for these players. And it's something that we've seen from Nicholas and Palmer and Tiger and Phil and all of these greats, you know, Spieth on down the list. Bryson. And so to go out there and be low am is a stepping stone of the greats. And so when you have a small group like we do this year, it's really important to go out there and play well, because again, this means something. Low amateur means something at these huge golf events.
Yeah, totally. It's just unique opportunity where you can easily finish last of the AMs and easily finish first because there's only three of them.
It's wild. Again, I think, you know, there's so many cool traditions, obviously, at Augusta National for Masters Week. You know, the way the AMs are celebrated is one of my favorite parts of it. You know, how much they're talked about, how much respect goes around with what they've been able to accomplish in their career, how much love we give them for what they did to get here. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of amateur golf, and kind of getting a chance to cover those amateur events with Fox and the USGA, it opened my eyes up to a world that I didn't even know existed in certain parts of that. And so to kind of see that celebration happen at the biggest stage in professional golf, in the biggest stage of golf, is something that I really appreciate. And really to come off the Augusta National Women's Amateur into Masters Week and seeing the way the amateurs are treated, it's really, really, really special week. And so, yeah, who's your pick? Who's your low-end pick?
I think you got to go with Strafacci. He's by far the highest ranked. That said, he's coming off an injury. He hurt his ribs, so he hasn't really played much golf. So that's the one kind of alarming thing. What about you? Who's your pick to win, too?
I was thinking about this throughout the week. I love Sungjae's chances. Andy, I try not to go with a chalk pick when I do these, because picking stuff is ridiculous to begin with, especially in golf. But I try to go with somebody that's not right there, you know, that's not the top five, that's not the top eight, that's not the most obvious. I like Sungjae going in. I think Sungjae's got a great chance to get himself in the conversation again. So I think the easy picks, JT or Spieth or DJ or whomever, but I think Sung Jae is who I'm kind of circling, is who I think has the most likely chance to do something special.
Yeah, I think obviously when you remove Rahm, DeChambeau, JT, DJ, and Spieth, then you get a little bit, it opens up a little bit. You know, I probably am going to pick one of those five. I'm still not sure who I'm going to pick, but...
You're not going to pick Westwood?
No. He's broken my heart too many times here. You know, I'm sneaky thinking Hideki's got a good shot. He hasn't done anything well recently, but...
Maybe an underrated pitcher as well. I mean, I think that's kind of what we're circling, at least on this podcast, is if you're going to look at somebody to love this week, especially, Andy, if we're going to see it fast. I mean, if it's going to stay like this, and I'm expecting it to stay like this, if it's going to be firm and play, you know, really, really tough Augusta National, it's going to be so important to be able to get the ball in and around the hole when you miss greens, because you're going to miss greens. So those are something
it's
to
just
think about.
It's going to magnify hitting into the greens and then hitting around the greens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you're going to miss greens.
Hey, real quick, people are going to hear more of you. That's exciting. I didn't even know about this until we started recording.
What's that?
This week. They're going to hear more from you than just live from, right?
Yeah. I'm a part of the Masters.com digital coverage as well, which starts obviously on Thursday. So super pumped about that. I feel, you know, you pinch yourself sometimes when you get these opportunities, and this is obviously as big a pinch as I've ever done to myself. You know, getting a chance to be a part of that. So very honored, very excited. It's again, it's just wild to get the opportunity to be here and get a chance to kind of be a part of these teams is such a cool thing. And you know, I still go back to 04. You know, I was a left-hander in East Texas. It was Easter Sunday. We were at my aunt's lake house. We had like a 20-inch TV in one of her bedrooms with, you know, rabbit ears. And Phil's going to win his first Masters potentially. And Phil was my guy. And I mean, it was the moment of all the moments as a kid I remember. That was the one that really kind of comes to mind was 04 Phil having that chance there and obviously pulling it off with the putt. I remember there was like 15 of us huddled around this very small TV watching the end of it. So to kind of be here in this capacity now, again, it's pinch worthy, that's for sure. So I'm very fired up for the week.
It's nothing better than getting the soothing tones of Shane Bacon's voice in your living room on Thursday and Friday mornings. You know, you're going to be with us before the coverage comes on. I feel like that's Masters.com probably, I would love to know the ratings that it would get, because I feel like everybody Thursday morning, there's no more heightened excitement about the Masters than Thursday morning.
Very, very excited. Excited for the week. I'm about to go back out there in a few minutes. I'm going to take a shower and go out. And
thanks for the time.
Of course. Anytime, you know that. But I'm excited about it. So, yeah, thanks for the time as well. I always love chatting with you. I knew, you know what? We only overlapped like one or two things. I was very proud of us. By the way, we didn't bring up Brooks Koepka once on this podcast, Andy. We didn't. I don't even know if we mentioned his name.
He's going to have the receipts. We're going to be getting tweets at us, maybe.
I know that's a great point.
It seems crazy to be able to swing a golf club all out but struggle to walk.
Well, I mean, I told you I watched that Tiger doc on HBO, and they focus obviously a lot on his injuries and him being injured and playing through it. And you see him, and he would literally be wincing to kind of stand up and to kind of extend the knee, and then he's hitting, you know, these three woods on greens and stuff, and it's just, I don't know if it's accepting the pain in your brain, you know, over the golf shot, going, I'm going to make a move. Who cares if it hurts? I can deal with it. Knowing that the golf swing is such a short amount of time, but something to these guys, man, they're a different breed. To go out there with a major injury and to be able to play through it is pretty crazy. And so, hey, whatever he does this week, mad respect for him just showing up.
Well, thanks so much for the time, Shane, and we'll talk soon.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. This episode was edited by Meg Atkins and Garrett Morrison. And a quick reminder, we've got a couple pools that are free to enter, free to win. You know, you get your chance to win free merchandise. So you can go on and sign up for those. If you're subscribed to the newsletter or if you're on social media, those they've been posted there. We've got a fried egg Masters pool. It's really simple. Go on, fill out your winner, and you'll get a chance to win. And then we also have a shotgun start pool that's got about 25 different questions, and it'll be your chance to win some free gear. So sign up for those pools if you want to get in on a little extra Masters action. And thank you again for listening to the Fried Egg Podcast.